inviting a lot of different types of individuals to this event. The goal is pretty much for me to show my students and former students different aspects of cybersecurity. We had Chris Roberts, who of course is a well-known hacker. We had General Petraeus, who's a former famous general, and you are a CISO of a fairly large organization. You've been CISO of the city of San Diego. You're a member of InfraGuard. You were in the US military as a CISO.
Oh, yes, we had an update. I hate updates.
Hey, Patricia. Patricia is not on mute. Can you mute? There she goes. Go ahead.
Okay. So I just wanted to thank you for taking the time to speak to my students. They are undergrad students here at Purdue Global, which is part of Purdue University. And, you know, there is no specific format for this event. The goal is typically, you know, the person that is going to speak speaks for about 20 minutes about one aspect of cybersecurity of their choice, and then we pretty much go into question and answers. Okay? Sounds good, Gary? So, by the way, Tina Burton is the dean of our school. I asked her for help to organize this. Tina, thank you very much for helping me organize this and having some absolutely fabulous people talking to the students. So thank you very much. Tina, would you like to say a few words before we get started?
No, I echo exactly what you said. You know, we're having a great time having these webinars and getting a lot of different thoughts from different industry folks. And I greatly appreciate you being here, Gary. And I'm sure the students would love to hear from you. And we have some faculty here too, just so you know, by the way. But feel free to just kind of share some of your thoughts. Certainly tell us how you got where you are. And we do have CISSP prep classes, and some students here may have taken them already. Some of them may even have the cert already. I noticed that you have some of the areas of specialization too, so you could probably talk about that, because I know that's somewhat above and beyond where our students currently are, but some folks do bring those in. So that's kind of an interesting spin on it. You want to talk about that too? And anything else you'd love to share with us?
Okay. Yeah, I've actually been doing quite a lot of these. And it's funny you talking with Chris. Chris Roberts and I are really close friends. We've known each other a long time. When we actually both tend to wear kilts when we're at DEF CON together, so it's pretty funny. about myself, I said I've been in cybersecurity and IT for probably about 25 plus years. I mean, I was in the military, actually working in the advanced electronics field, working with weapon systems, doing a degree in EE, but I've always loved computers. You know, I've always been fascinated by, you know, hacking things and taking things apart and working with computers. And it actually, just by luck, I was on deployment and found, Win Schwartau's book, Information Warfare, while I was on deployment in the late 90s. And reading that book, I just became fascinated with, here's somebody in the late 90s that's talking about net-centric warfare, that's talking about where we're at almost 30 years later. And it just, I was just fascinated by what he was discussing. And it opened up my eyes to a lot more dealing with networks and with IT and security. And at that time, one of the gentlemen I worked with, who was a bit of a squirrel and drove at a time when we were active duty military, and drove my command nuts dealing with this guy. But the guy was probably one of the most gifted hackers I've ever met, you know, and he obviously didn't fit in the military, but you know, he was a fascinating person to learn from and the mentor with. And because of him, when I got back from deployment, I basically, built a lab in my garage and self-taught myself, you know, how to hack, paid for all my own certs. And I was very driven that this was going to be a career field that I was going to work in. And it just became, and to this day, 20 some years later, I'm still very passionate about it. you know, I don't really look at it as being a job. It's more of a community, and it's something that I, you know, I'm actively involved in, that I mentor and work with, you know, CISOs and vets that are transitioning. I work, I'm very active in the neurodiversity, you know, side of our community. I have two sons who are ASD, and both are in IT. One's doing data science, and the other one's actually studying for his first certifications. Yeah. So, I've worked with all kinds of different groups, and I love cybersecurity, and in my roles, every role that I've taken as a CISO, I've ended up doing something different, you know, and I've ended up working with a different group, or, you know, in the military, you know, I dealt with massive networks all over the world, and in the military, and then also when I retired from the military and civil service, you know, working in cybersecurity and IT, I was a CIO, I was a CISO, I was a chief privacy officer, I was several of those at the same time. You know, I ran network teams, I ran security teams, I did manage forensics, I did audit. You know, the Inspector General's office had me part of an audit team that would go over and Fifth Fleet, go over to the Middle East for a lot of the military networks and audit them. And it was interesting. I mean, each role I had, I learned something different. Each role I had, I realized it was much more that I needed to know. And to this day, I'm taking classes. To this day, I'm working on certs. You know, I'm in the process of writing one book, planning for another book, getting ready to take a course of classes at Harvard on cyber and risk. And, you know, it's just, I'm always busy. I'm always working on something. Just because the field is so advanced and things are just changing so much. But when I left the government side, I came over to the city of San Diego, where I got to work in massive smart city projects and learn a lot about integrated infrastructures. And very fascinating 4 years of my life. And I was happy to leave at the end of the 4 years, you know, because I was pretty much burned out. I was like, all right, I'm done. Don't want to play anymore. You know, and so I jumped over to private industry, where I was the CISO at Webroot. And Webroot was interesting because not only was I doing internal security and risk and governance, but I actually got to play with customers. I actually got to play with product teams. I actually got to work with marketing and sales. And it was interesting. I mean, it's a very fast moving side of a business. I got to see some changes in the security community that are very unique, because the fact that security vendors and their security executives, if you're a CISO of a security vendor in the CISO community, you're kind of like a second class citizen, which is really interesting. And I've actually written articles. I just wrote an article on it because it's total crap and I'm still angry about it. And I'm trying to get other CISOs and knock it off. But they just kind of look at, So they just look at security vendors as just being there to provide a product, but they don't think that, hey, this is just a business, just like any other business. And you got to have security executives. You got to have security teams. And those people need training. Those people need to attend conferences. So you can't blow them off, you know, and then get mad because your security product doesn't work. I mean, you know, so it's like, so I've been very active in that space. And then, you know, last year when Webroot got acquired, I stuck my foot into financial services when I came over to SoftBank, and it's just been amazing. And that sometimes it's a total freak show, but it's just interesting with all the different startups and the deals and the different things that you see and the companies that are out there and the new technologies that are going on. And I provide, again, I'm doing internal security. But I also am dealing with a lot of audit from regulatory agencies all over the world because we're an international company. And I also do cyber due diligence on new deals on companies that they're looking to invest in, looking at risk. And so it's, I find every day it's something different, you know, and so that's kind of my career path over the last 20 years as I've moved from. Each time I've moved, I never really cared about the title. It was more of the experience and the people I was going to be working with. And obviously, you want to get paid nice, but it's more of you know, being able to be part of the company and being able to contribute and be involved, be part of the C-suite, being able to go ahead and see you get things done. You know, I as a CISO, I don't really look at myself as a security executive. I really look at myself as a business executive that happens to manage security and risk, you know, through people and technology and politics is the way I look at it. You know, I extensively use my MBA a lot of times. When I'm working with non-technical, you know, peers and other, you know, a lot of the other business units, I find in this position, one of the biggest things that's a very core tool for CISOs is understanding the culture that you're in and understanding what the business actually does. You know, what are they there for? What are they making money? You know, what, you know, they may say, hey, this is our mission, but really when you look at the operational side of the house, this is really what they do. All right. And if you understand that, you know, what they're doing, where they're, who they're competing with, what technologies they need, what data that they create and that they require, what regulations are tied to those business, you know, services and everything, then you in security, you know, you start understanding from a context standpoint, how you relate to that. How do you support that? How do you help them achieve that? How do you protect them? You know, if you are, when you're building out a security team, when you're building out a security program, if you focus it towards that, towards the business and what they're doing and what they're trying to achieve, you actually can grow your team. You actually get budget. You actually, people actually give a crap about you and your security team and because you're helping them achieve things. You know, I can't, when I was at Webroot, I can't tell you the times I went around and around with the dev teams because they didn't care what I was doing. But once I spent time with them and I really understood Agile and I did a bunch of Scrum stand-ups with them and I better understood how my security teams worked with them, and it was no longer, you know, fighting and arguing because things were visible. They could see what my projects were, what my initiatives were. We were working on ISO, what things I needed help in. And I started asking them to join my projects, and they started asking me and my teams to join theirs. You start building that trust, you know, but to do that, you have to understand the business, you know. So it's a big thing that I've learned the hard way, you know, because in the government, the risk is all black and white. You follow a policy, you follow a reg, you follow a law. It has to be this way. You scream at people and say, do it this way. When you get out of the federal side of the house, when you get out of the government side and you get out of the private industry, they just tell you to pound sand because they don't have to listen to you. You know? You're not making money. You know, you're not really bringing in money for the business. So they just kind of look at you as like, yeah, whatever. You know, so you have to, now comes the fun part. Now you have to influence. Now you have to be providing some type of service. You've got to be providing a reason why they want to listen to you, you know, and you don't do that unless you understand the business and unless you understand how it runs and what services they need and what policies impact them and what policies actually help them do their job, you know, and controls. And so, I mean, I can tell you when I do an assessment, and I go through and look at all the controls and the policies. I look at everything that we're doing as a business, you know, whether it's GDPR or ISO or CIS or NIST. When I get a list of issues, just a list of the crap and just the risk and the stuff that, all right, you know, we're not as mature as I thought we were and we got to fix these things. I don't make decisions on that. You know, I bring all of that together and then I proceed to go ahead and bring in the VPs of the other business units, and then we have a discussion because that risk is not mine. And it's the biggest issue that CISOs need to get out of. You don't own the business's risk. The business made the decisions. It's their risk. You have to understand that risk. You have to understand the context and how it's related to current operations. You have to know workarounds. You have to know what rules and regulations apply to it. You do your assessments. You pull those risks and things that are immature and things that need to be fixed. And then you get everybody together. And then you ask their help to help you prioritize what needs to be worked on first. Because from a security standpoint, I could go right away and say, okay, all these criticals, we're doing those now. Yeah. And then the dev team will be sitting there telling me, well, that breaks $40 million worth of this. Okay, well, we're not doing that now. You know, so instead, you get them to help you prioritize what needs to be done. And then that prioritized list, honestly, becomes the CISO's strategic plan for the next 36 months. And you break it down into 12-month increments, and that becomes your budget. That becomes the strategic plan for your team. And it's visible, so that all the other departments know what InfoSec is working on. They know what the CISO is working on, because they help create it. And then what you do is, on your annual piece, when you reassess, they're part of the reassessment. And things change. You're going to pull different technologies out. You're going to update your stack. You know, the company may pivot and decide they're going to go into this international market. Well, that requires us to get SOC 2 certified, or that requires us to go FedRAMP, because we're going to go play with the government side now. But the thing about it is you've put a process in place. You've got a framework in place, and you've got, now got people from the other departments who are part of that process, you know, and it's, so you've gone from a security discussion to really a business discussion about security, you know, which you're leading, you know, and what ends up happening is from a security standpoint, you actually get budget. You can actually put together, you know, metrics that the board will accept, and they don't tell you to get the hell out. They actually accept what you're talking about, you know, because it's more business aligned. So that's what I've been doing for the last, you know, kind of 5 years, is building all that out and writing articles about it and books on it, is kind of that view on how to do cybersecurity. So I'm done kind of rambling. I think that's probably enough to start asking questions.
Thank you, Gary, for your introduction. So one of the first things I'd like to talk about is your search. You know, typically when I teach my class, do my first class, I start talking about my degrees and certs, and for once, someone beats me with more certs than I have. And you know, some of the certs that you have are quite impressive. I mean, you are ISSCP, which is the level above CISSP, because there is a level above CISSP. You have a number of other certs. What are your thoughts on certs? I mean, obviously, we want to tell students that certs are important because the class focuses on CISSP, but I'd like you to talk about, you know, your ISACA certs, your Cisco certs, Linux Plus, all of these, and CISSP. How do you see it all tying up together?
I mean, the thing about it is that I, you know, my certs were a process. As my career progressed, and I kind of pivoted and moved from different jobs and moved to working on different teams, I would get certs that would kind of dovetail to what I was working on. And, you know, I mean, I've had the arguments at Black Hat at DEF CON, and besides, you know, hanging out with peers and hanging out with friends, and people are arguing about certs back and forth. And whether you like it or not, certs are one way that help people differentiate from each other. It's also one way that HR teams and businesses, you know, use to go ahead and differentiate, you know, a person's level of knowledge. But it should not be the only thing that you use. You know, typically when I go ahead and I look at somebody, you know, if I'm looking to interview for a position, you know, I may go ahead and request, you know, specific certs in education and or experience. And then when I'm interviewing, what I look for is I look for community involvement. What I look for is that, okay, because my thing is, okay, you've earned a cert and then that's it. You've been in the field 10 years and you only did one cert. That to me shows me that, you know, Barry, you don't really look at this community as being a career field for you. You're just a, you know, a 9-to-5 person. You come in, you work, and you go. That's not cybersecurity. You know, cyber is 24/7. Cyber is you're on call. Cyber is getting calls at 2 a.m. in the morning because somebody just ransomware one of your offices, you know, on the East Coast. You know, cyber is, you know, being in that long, dark tunnel, and there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's just a continuous tunnel, but that's cybersecurity, you know. And so what I look for is a continuous progression of different job positions, a tenuous continuous progression of a level of responsibility, a continuous progression of involvement in the community. Are you volunteering at B-Sides? Are you building projects and learning Linux and learning how to do Kali and, you know, hack your neighbor's PS3? Whatever. I mean, you know, what I'm looking at is that you are progressing and still learning and picking up skills no matter how long you're in. Certs are just a piece of that. And are they important? You know, that argument is out there. I looked at they are. You know, I've got a, if you look at my LinkedIn profile, I've probably got about 16 or 17 things there. I only keep about 4 or 5 current. And the ones that I keep current are those that I actively use. You know, that I actively use right now. You know, so I actively use audit. I actively use data privacy. You know, I actively use risk and governance. You know, so a lot of my ISAC asserts, which are more fine-tuned for specific areas in cyber and in, you know, in privacy and in audit. You know, so I've done those for specific areas, or I've done CISSP for a lot wider, for a lot, you know, a lot wider view. And, you know, I do, I keep them, you know, I keep them updated, just because of the fact that, whether you like it or not, you need them, you know. With that said, I'm not one of those people that likes to go ahead and have my name and then, like, you know, a 30 character list of abbreviations. I kind of think that's kind of tacky. You know, I usually just do my name and CISSP and I just leave it at that. You know, if people were really interested in my search, they'll go look at my LinkedIn profile. I don't really care. You know, but they are, unfortunately, they are important. You're going to find that if you get out of school with your degree and you are competing with a position with somebody else who has a degree, one of the first things that they don't really give a crap about GPAs. They'll look at, okay, you got a degree, and then they're going to look at, okay, what certs do you have? And then they're going to look at, okay, what else are you doing? Are you writing articles? Are you involved in the community? Are you doing projects? You know, you want to have that broader view. So, yes, certs are important, but get involved in the community. Be joining ISACA or ISSA or, you know, InfraGuard, you know, the various professional groups. You know, you want to do that because you need to build your network.
Yeah, so, Gary, if I may interrupt you for a second. So, InfraGuard is an association with the FBI. Any U.S. citizen that doesn't have a criminal record can join in InfraGuard. They have meetings that are fairly interesting. There is the FBI Citizens Academy, which is over 10 weeks, and you learn to shoot guns. You witness potentially bomb explosions and stuff. It's, so, some of the stuff is pretty cool. You talk about, you know, drugs. You know, there is sometimes some undercover agents that come and speak to you. Fairly interesting. I urge anyone that is interested to participate to those events, potentially look at participating to the InfraGuard Citizens Academy, which is, again, with the FBI. You'll be doing this at the FBI's office in your local town. But there is, again, plenty of other organizations. So, Gary, to reemphasize, we are focused on this class on CISSP. Can you verify that CISSP has an incredible value in terms of getting hired in a cybersecurity role or something connected to cybersecurity, whether it's computer network response, whether it's auditing, whether it's governance or things of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, I can honestly say I've seen you know, hiring teams that when they look at, you know, when they look to hire people, you will see in the job description CISSP is required. Yeah, you know, it's usually one of the first certs that'll be that will be listed, you know, because they're what they're looking at is at least that you'll have some level of knowledge, some level of experience. You know, sometimes, you know, they may list other things besides that, you know, just depending on the job, you know, if the job also involves audit or other things. But I've always seen CISSP pops up for most mid to senior level job descriptions. Yeah, so it is something that's very important. The big thing to remember, as I've said before, is don't stop there. Okay, you know, it may get your foot in the door, but it's the other pieces that you need to go ahead and get you all the way through and be able to sit your butt down in that chair and have the interview.
So you have a number of other certs. Would you mind going through some of your other certs and giving your thoughts about the other certs? What I'd like is, you know, for students to be able to gauge from different individuals, you know, what's valuable, why, and so forth. So do you think, for example, CEH, what are your thoughts on CEH?
I wouldn't recommend CEH. The only reason I took it was somebody else paid for it.
I'm glad that you agree with this. I had to do it. I was required, but it was pretty useless and worthless.
I mean, and honestly, I'm actually bringing up my because I actually forgot all the certs that I got on there. I'm sorry to say.
So the simple certs.
But anyhow,
right.
But what I would say is, like, you know, the thing about it is if you are interested in pen testing, then, you know, roll the dice and do it for real. Go ahead and go to with offensive security, you know, and, you know, they're the ones that have the Cali distribution, and they're the ones that do the, you know, the OF, I think it's OCFP or OFCP. I think it's OFCP. They're the ones that do the offensive, the offensive cybersecurity certs. And those, you know, and those certs are no joke. Those things are, you're basically timed, you're in a lab, and you actually have to go in and basically break through all the various, you know, machines and servers and document everything you did. You know, the practicals for it are incredible. And it's considered to be, if you're going to go into pen testing, it's one of the best certs out there. You know, so don't waste your money on CEH. You know, definitely do the offensive security certs.
And how do you see these compared to the SANS certs?
They're on the same level with SANS, just SANS is more expensive.
But would you say that SANS is equivalent to the offensive penetration testing certs?
Yeah, both of them are.
Way above CEH, right? We all agree that CEH...
Yeah, CEH is kind of like entry level. These things are up at journey and master level. You know, and the thing I found, like, with them, when I did the offensive... defensive security ones, the OSCP, and there's three or four of them now. They've added a bunch in there, but like with that whole community is the OSCP certs and the other, you know, OS certs. They've got a very strong community, and when you're actively engaged working on those certs, they actually help each other. You know, just understand that when you're in the forums and you're working on stuff and you're researching stuff, they also talk crap to each other too. So, you know, be prepared for that. You're dealing with hackers. It is what it is. But but they are excellent certs.
Okay. And you have also Linux Plus. I think it's one of those certs, even though it's supposed to be kind of entry level, that I would recommend to the students. Would you kind of agree that Linux Plus would be a good complement for someone that is entering the field, that gets his CSSP, to kind of, you know, put him on CSSP's managerial? Linux Plus gives you hands-on, you can do some Linux.
Yeah, the if you notice there, I've got Linux Plus, and then I've also got the LPIC Tech 1, or the Linux Professional Institute. What I found doing both of those, Linux Plus was good as its entry level. The Linux Professional Institute, or LPI certs, LPI certs are actually more in depth. They're more in depth with a lot more hands-on. You know, so if you need to learn some Linux, I would definitely recommend that. You know, if you're planning, if your goal is to, you know, you want to get heavy in the cloud and be doing a lot of stuff in cloud, especially if you're on the GCP platform, you better be looking to do a lot of Linux. You know. Okay.
So you also mentioned Cisco certs. Of course, this would be granted that Cisco and Linux Plus would be good starts in a career. I mean, of course, if you go at expert level in Linux, in Cisco, obviously you're gonna do phenomenal. But an entry level in Cisco and the Linux Plus would be a good start, right?
Yeah, I mean, and understand, I mean, I got into the Cisco certs because at the time I was doing networks, I was doing my Microsoft stuff, my Microsoft certs, which I don't keep anymore because I don't really need to. But And the reason I was doing the network stuff is it was actually recommended to me by several people working in the cybersecurity field that, you know, doing your CCNA, doing your CCNP, you really understand how networks are put together. And I found doing the Cisco certs actually made Microsoft make a lot more sense. You know, because as I was doing the Microsoft certs, when you really get down into the weeds on the protocols and how the servers are put together and the way things work, a lot of it makes sense because it's all writing on a network, you know, and packets are a certain length and protocols are designed a certain way. And you learn all of that doing Network Plus and doing your CCNA, you know, and I also found doing Network Plus and doing my CCNA, having that really good base view of how networks are put together helps you when you're into security on how to protect networks when people are trying to hack them and break into them and you're troubleshooting networks. You know, I mean, having that network experience is, to me, has paid dividends, you know, years later as a CISO, because I understand how networks were built. And I mean, I can sit there and talk with network engineers because I was one, you know, and I can look at network maps and I know what I'm looking at. And because for me, it's all about data flows. It's all about, you know, I'm a systems thinker when I look at how things are designed and implemented together.
I wish all network administrators understood the data flow diagram and the PPSM, but unfortunately, that's not the case. But anyway, ISAC asserts, you have a bunch of them. What are your certs on the ISAC asserts?
Yeah, I can tell you the ISAC asserts are excellent. Yeah, they're probably some of the best asserts I've ever done. They're a professional group, the ISAC professional group that you can become a member of. Every chapter I've been in has been very well done. I've actually done keynotes for them and I've written articles for them. And they actually produce a lot of really good white papers and books and stuff too that I've periodically purchased from them. What I got from them is originally I did the CISA, you know, basically the auditor, the Certified Information Security Auditor cert. That's still one of the key auditor certs that if you're, you know, applying for some audit position that involves information security, they typically look to see, do you have your CISSA cert, you know, your CISA cert. And then I have the CRISC cert and, you know, CRISC, that's around governance. That's risk and governance. If you're doing risk management, if you're involved in a risk governance team, that's an excellent cert for you. I went ahead and did it, even though I was 2 years in already on a risk team. I did it anyhow just because I wanted to better understand how private industry viewed risk and you know, talking with a lot of my peers. And then just recently I did their privacy solutions engineer one, their certified data privacy solutions engineer. If you're into data privacy or personal privacy, there's two levels of certs. You can do this one, which is kind of wide ranging, and it looks at data privacy involved with applications and, you know, kind of IT. And then you also have privacy on a wider scale involved in IAPP. I think it's the International Association of Privacy Professionals, you know, called IAPP.org. If you go into IAPP.org, you'll see that they have a whole section of certs dealing around privacy. And so most people today, if you are working in cybersecurity and you're involved in privacy, they'll have one of the IAPP certs. In fact, I've got several books I'm currently studying for one right now. But it's like those are considered to be the top of the line certs for data privacy.
Okay, thank you. You also mentioned PMP, and I'll put them together. PMP and ITIL I have recommended to my students that they get ITIL because, frankly, the recommended studying time is 16 hours, and it's one of the top 10 most paying job certifications. Would you agree that even though it doesn't bring much, it would be good for a student to have to potentially get some interest from organizations interested in service desk?
I'm saying, you know, to give your students an idea, you know, why they would even want to bother with ITIL. You got to understand, enterprise IT is a total freak show, unless you're using ITIL. from someone who's been a CIO, from someone who's been a CISO, from someone who's had 10,000 employees and 40 departments, and everyone's trying to do their own thing, and you're trying to organize the stuff, and it just gets crazy. ITIL gives you a framework with multiple levels to be able to look at implementing enterprise IT with a methodology of how you can manage the chaos, you know, how you can manage change management. How do you manage, you know what I'm saying? And the first one, I did the foundations one, and there are several more on that, you know, and then service management, I got involved with that because we were implementing ServiceNow. And typically what I find, especially if the organizations are getting more mature and they have a CIO that knows what they're doing, you know, he or she has extensive experience in scaling, you know, IT infrastructure and IT programs, they typically use ITIL. It's an international framework. I've seen it in companies all over the world. And it's a very good roadmap for building out an IT program and having the various core components of an IT program in place. So when you start adding technology and people and policies and everything, you've got a framework to run it on. You know,
So my apologies. So for everybody listening, the recommended studying time by ITIL to pass foundation is 16 hours, meaning 2 days of studying. This is the recommended time you should be able to pass. Requires no experience. It's a test of, 35 questions, something like that? It's very little, 30. It's under 50 questions. I mean, it's very quick. I think, and I hope Gary will agree with me, this is something that everyone that is here, by the end of next week, you should all have bought the book, studied it, and passed the exam. Because, you know, it's one of the top 10 most popular certs for a reason, for some reason.
So Laurent, I was going to ask, since you know our courses right now, just so you know, Gary, our courses are 10 weeks in length, you know, single subject, basically. So you think you could learn everything you need to know for ITIL in one class?
Oh, not even one class. It's 16 hours of studying time. No, it's 1 week of studying.
That's for you. Not everybody.
The thing about it is with ITIL, what you'll find is, and the reason I actually recommend it is something to do later on as you get into your career, you know, but the reason I recommend it is the fact that IT teams and security teams, you work together. Your processes are intertwined, your different technology stacks are intertwined and, you know, and integrated together. No matter whether you like it or not, you know, the IT teams and the security teams work together a lot, you know, and ITIL will influence you. It will impact you in security, you know, so it's best to understand. The foundations course helps you understand the basics, helps you understand if IT is screwing it up. You know, it does. It helps you understand how an IT department should be set up and how you should be working with them.
Okay. So, Gary, we have a question from Neil Edmund. David Beckham. The question is, which concentration for CISSP do you think is most in demand for government and public sectors? Good luck with the question.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, because the thing about it is they've added so many things right now. I mean, typically the first one, CISSP, they're looking for. And the big one I'm seeing now is cloud. Anything dealing with cloud.
So to go maybe a little bit towards what David said, I think the three concentration, which is the management certification, CISSP-ISSMP, ISSEP for engineer, and ISSAP for architect, all three, they are rarely demanded in government. It's occasionally demanded. It's very rarely demanded. In private sector, I am unaware if it's ever required.
Yeah, typically.
Go ahead, sir.
No, I'm saying typically it's just CISSP is what they require. I did the ISSEP because of the fact that I was actually working for the military at the time. I was in civil service for the federal government, and I was in the middle of building out some large network data centers, and we were doing a lot of, you know, architect stuff. So I, you know, it was kind of required for me to have a higher level cert. And so I went ahead and I did it. And after I did it, I just kind of realized, you know, I don't really need this. And so I did the ISACA certs and I did some other stuff instead, which is the reason why I haven't done, you know, the MP or the architect, because I don't need it. You know, I do have plans to eventually do the CCSP, just because of the fact that, you know, it's kind of interesting. You can do the CCSP to give you an overall view of cloud and security. And then you can go ahead and do, you know, and then if you want to go more in depth, you know, you go ahead and you do certain vendor certs, whether it's, you know, Azure, AWS, or GCP. You know, typically if someone's going to do cloud certs, I recommend AWS because they have about 60-some% of the market, you know, and they're a lot more mature than GCP or Azure from a cert training standpoint. And typically, if someone's going to be working on the AWS certs, you know, I tell them to go talk to Cloud Guru. You know, Cloud Guru is a third party that does AWS cert training, and they're actually certified by AWS. AWS loves them, you know, and they and you can buy like the whole package, the whole certification training package for less than $500, you know, and I use them for, you know, a bunch of different stuff for training, you know, a lot of my team members. But it's like, you know, so you kind of look at the CCSP to have a security broad overview that's vendor agnostic. And then you go ahead and you look at, you know, having the AWS, if you want to get in really in depth to go ahead and see how cloud works and all the various pieces of it. Just understand when you start playing with AWS, it can get pretty crazy because they have over 100+ different services. And it's, yeah, you can get lost, you know, and yeah, it can be pretty expensive.
And we use, you know, we have a cloud computing degree and we picked Linux Academy, which just got bought out by Cloud Guru, for that reason, because we teach both AWS and Azure in our program. And so the Linux Academy provided them with both. So they get that through their classes in the program. Yeah.
And in fact, that's right. They just added Azure within the last year. You know, I actually bought their AWS package about 2 years ago, and I've done updates with it and everything. And but yeah, I mean, but that's typically what I recommend. You know, and then, you know, Cloud Security Alliance, you know, has some certs also, and there, and I've actually got one of theirs, but they tend to be more general. They tend to be more general, more vendor agnostic, very similar to CCSP.
Cool. Thank you, Gary. Let's talk a little bit about money, if you don't mind. One of the things that I tell students, I just started a class this past Sunday, and I tell students, okay, you know, you're going to do this because, you know, you're going to help protect the organizations and so forth. You know, you're going to get a degree and so forth. But, you know, bottom line, we all study partially because we want to make a little money, right? I tell students that typically with the CISSP, in my experience, at least dealing with government work, you're going to get at least $80,000 upwards. If you work private sector, I know you can get above 200. It's fairly common. Would you like to pretty much comment on this? Because I'm sure students need to hear that, you know, there's money and there's jobs. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can tell you remember, you know, CISSP doesn't guarantee $80,000. You know,
of course not.
CISSP, you know, with, you know, some education and experience and, you know, participation in the community, showing that, you know, you are, you know, you're increasing your education, you're increasing, you know, your professional involvement, that gets you to 80K. You know, that basically helps you step out, you know, and it helps you show that you're worth 80K or more. You know, I mean, my son just graduated from San Diego State with a degree in business and statistics, but he knows how to program in R and Python and Tableau and SQL. And, you know, he taught himself all of that off of Udemy, and he decided he wanted to do data science. And so he, you know, spent the last 2 years interning, you know, for companies out here and taught himself data science while he finished up his degree. And he started out at 72K, and now he's adding, you know, a whole bunch more to that because he's decided that data science is where he wants to go. So, I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying is, you know, coming out in cyber, you know, with some of the higher level certs, you're probably looking at 70, 80K to start. But the big thing they're also going to be looking at is experience. You know, the problem you run into in the cybersecurity field is that, you know, experience is the big thing that everybody's battling for. You know, and it's the one thing that you don't really get from school, you know, so much. It's, you know, you got to be, you know, to give you an idea, I mean, for me, when I was in the Navy, I knew I needed, when I was doing my certifications, I knew I needed experience to go with those certs. And so I, you know, along with my lab in the garage, learning how to do all this stuff and paying for my certs, I was actually working out in town part-time, you know, working for a lot of nonprofits for free, just so I could get experience working in data centers and building servers and running networks and stuff. You know, I didn't care about getting paid. The Navy was paying me. I just needed the experience. You know, I'm not saying everybody's going to do that, but it's one of those things that you've got to understand is the CISSP gets you into the conversation. You know, the experience and the other things that you're bringing to the table, you know, gets you the interview where you can get yourself an offer. You know, now how far it goes, honestly, how far it goes is going to go ahead and it's going to be, just understand that there's a lot of crappy jobs that you're going to start with. I'm just telling you, don't be surprised, because the thing about this is that by the time you get to being a security analyst, you've already probably worked at the help desk and done some other stuff like that for several years before you became a security analyst. That's normal, you know, and it's not uncommon for people to go ahead and be, you know, working in network, working, you know, in the IT teams, and they jump over to security, you know, as they get their CISSP. You have in your CISSP, you've already shortchanged some of that, but you've got to start somewhere. You know, and yeah, like swabbing a deck, you know, and typically you'll start, you know, as an analyst, you'll start, you know, in the beginning. So you may not be working, making 80K, you only be making 60. And then from 60, you jump up to, you know, 80 to 90 as you move into the analyst, you know, positions. And then like here in San Diego, you know, from that, you get into, once you've got a couple of years of that and you start adding some other certs, you start getting into being an engineer, you know, and the engineer, you're up at 120, 125. You start picking up certs like your Cisco certs or your Palo Alto certs, you know, that bumps you around the 140 and starts putting you in the architect range. Once you start getting in an architect, you've got five to, you know, somewhere between 5 to 8 years of experience. You've probably run a team or two. You've done some major projects. You know, architects that are somewhere between 160 to 180. You know, and then after that, you start getting into management. You know, basically it's manager, director, you know, CISO. And those tend to be, you know, you're looking at anywhere between 180, 200, 220, 250. You know, once you're at CISO, you know, around about 240 range, then, you know, it just depends on, you know, what do you want to do and how far do you want to go? I mean, you know, I started as a CISO for the city of San Diego at 125 and left there at 160. You know, I started at, you know, 240 at Webroot and left there at 265. And I'm making $500,000 right now at SoftBank, you know. And I'm actually, you know, medium rank up in the Bay Area, because in the Bay Area, they're no joke, you know. But of course, the Bay Area is kind of stupid when it comes to pay. But it's just, you know, the best thing I can tell you is it's a level of progression, you know, and, you know, I've done the grunt work. I've sat there for hours building Cat 5 cables and fixing, you know, climbed underneath streets down in sewer systems chasing fiber, you know, and fixing fiber connections and stuff, going into a mound that was running fiber for a data center. You know, that's what I'm saying. You know, I mean, I've done all kinds of different work. So, I mean, I've built systems and built out data centers and run, you know, security operation centers. And the biggest thing is that don't shy away from the work. Don't shy away from being part of projects, because each project that you're a part of, even though it's a lot of work, you're going to learn things new. You're going to add things to your toolbox. You're going to go ahead and see new things that you want to get a cert in or new things that you want to take a class in. And basically, you add more things to put into your resume, so you show a broader view and a broader depth of knowledge and experience. You know, and each one of those things moves you up a ladder and moves you up to where, you know, you can get in positions to where you're managing a team, or you can get into positions to where, you know, you're going for some of the management stuff if you want. You know, I've had people who never were interested in management, but they were interested in projects. They were interested in cool technology and doing new things, you know, and you get chances to do that, you know, and it's all really about what you put into it. You know, 'cause you got to remember, you know, I'm sorry.
One question, if I may. We have a lot of students that are military, active duty military.
Yep.
Or former active duty, or that have security clearance. My assertion is that for those students having already a clearance, the ability to have a clearance already is something that has already some extra value, and it bumps up salaries by a few thousand. I mean, 10,000 to 20,000. Would you concur with that?
It kind of depends. I mean, I have an active top secret, and SoftBank could give a crap less.
You know, so, no, I mean, for government jobs, and of course,
on the government side.
If you go to the Black Force, I mean, of course, it doesn't matter. But if you're going to work for, you know, Raytheon or Lockheed, or, you know, straight as a GS employee, you know, there's going to be some additional value to the salary, right? Because there's so few people that can get a clearance that, you know, they give a premium to the dollar amounts that you gave. That's what I wanted you to. That's my opinion.
Well, I mean, and, you know, and honestly, it kind of depends. I mean, I've seen it go both ways. You know, I've had you know, companies that are happy if you've got an active clearance that they can just go ahead and bring over. You know, that their FSO can just go ahead and bring over, and you know, and yeah, you it makes it easier for them to go ahead and hire you. But the problem is that obviously, if you're trying to get a job with a, you know, with a, with say like a DOD or a federal contractor, and you're in an area that's a big cluster of them, you're a dime a dozen. You know, so you may have the security clearance. You know, so then the thing comes down is, okay, you got the security clearance, and then what certs do you have? What experience do you have? What involvement in the community do you have? You know, see what I'm saying? You got to have all of these pieces, because if you're going up against 8 other people and all of them have clearances, so what's the difference? You know, having that clearance allows you to go in for the job, you know, and so that, and so they do like that, you know. And honestly, I've seen businesses, you know, just out here in San Diego, I've had DOD contractors here in SoCal try to shortchange me because, you know, I had a clearance and everything like that, because they just figured I didn't know enough, you know, about the pay and everything else. And but being involved in the community and having a network and being involved with the professional groups and everything out here, I know what people are getting paid. So you can go back and argue with them, you know, because you're educated on it. So, I mean, you know, the clearance helps, but you need to be educated. You need to know, okay, somebody with this clearance should be making right around this amount. Because you are doing, you know, you are doing them a solid. They don't have to go ahead and put out 100K, you know, to go ahead and get you, you know, through the whole clearance process. You know, they're basically saving that.
For those of you who are looking for jobs, I can tell you that at Top Gun right now, they are actually desperate for people because no one wants to move over there. But of course, it's not that much fun. The town is 3,500, and there's no apartment rentals. So you need to buy a house because there's pretty much nothing else. So yes. Okay. So do we have any questions from people so far? Anyone have any questions? We'll wait a few seconds. Let me look back my little cheat sheet. So what are your thoughts on the future of cybersecurity in the meantime? Do you think there is a long-term future to cybersecurity? Are we encouraging our students to do the right job pretty much, the right job pretty much?
The thing about it is I look at cybersecurity as, it's a field that's not going away, but it will change. Because, it basically shifts, it's going to go ahead and it's going to shift with the technology, with the threats, with the various, with the community. I mean, everything changes. And so it's like, if you were doing it 10 years ago, you never would have thought about cloud. And now, it's like, if you're in cybersecurity and you're expecting to be here long term, you better be doing some type, something dealing with cloud and understand it, because you are going to deal with it. The company I work at right now, SoftBank, we're 100% cloud. So I don't own any data centers. My stuff isn't everybody else's data centers. But it changes your security stack. It changes your policies. It changes the skill sets that you recruit for. I do think that there's a core, piece of cybersecurity that's always going to be there. But the way it's implemented and how companies use it and how you will be working in it 10, 15 years from now, it's just going to be different. Because, it's based on the technology and threats and the business environment, and all of that is constantly changing, as things get upgraded. So, that's why I sit there and say, you guys are in a good career field. It's going to be here. It's not going anywhere. It ain't like, the cyber criminals that are making billions of dollars are going to decide to go ahead and to say, okay, hey, I don't need the money. I'm going to go on welfare. No, they're going to go ahead and keep on figuring out other ways to hack into companies and to go ahead and break into, organizations because they want money. They're going to do it. So the job's going to be there. What's going to change, though, is, the certs will change, the education will change, the methodologies will change, the frameworks we use will shift and will upgrade. It is what it is. That's why I tell you, and I actually advise a lot of people coming in the field, I'm actually talking to a room of 40 veterans next Friday who are doing a big Microsoft certification, thing, and who are getting ready to graduate and go do some jobs, that, hey, you guys are in a career field that you can pretty much do your whole career. But one thing though, you're going to be continuously educating yourself. Don't think that, hey, I'm done and I can just sit in a cubby for the next 20 years and take a retirement. That's not cyber. You're going to be actively involved. You're going to be dealing with issues. Breaches are just part of the cyber life cycle. They're going to happen. You're going to be doing cleanup at times. So it's just one of those things. You're going to be continually educating yourself. So you're going to want to go to conferences. You're going to want to be involved in these professional organizations. You're going to want to work on certs, and as your career progresses, you'll probably work on different things because you'll need them, with the particular job or project, whatever you're working on. Just understand, you are not stopping. This is a long process, and it basically will go with you for the rest of your career.
So do you have a little bit more time, or are we running out of time with you? How are we doing in terms of time?
I'm good. I can stay as long as you guys got questions.
So I have a question. You mentioned the cloud. I'm personally not a big fan of cloud. I like security. And for me, putting something on the cloud, you don't have control. I like to have silos where what is on my left hand doesn't talk to my right hand. Do you think, since you're working for SoftBank, do you see cloud as something that we're not going to be able to oppose? And, everything is going to be on the cloud, and potentially we're going to make it easier for perpetrators, and hopefully we'll defend it properly, some mysteriously. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, everything's already on cloud now. When you really think about it, I mean, you may be thinking, okay, I work at a university and I've got a data center and I got all my servers racked. Well, that's fine. But as soon as the data on that wire leaves that server, where does it go? It goes out onto the internet, and all the ISPs and everybody are running cloud. So, I mean, you may be in a non-cloud on-premise bubble, but everybody else is on cloud one way or another. I mean, your phone and the services and the apps that are running, those are on cloud. When you come home and you log onto the internet and you're doing Office 365, you're using cloud. You're watching Netflix, you're using cloud. You're on DoorDash and you're ordering lunch, you're using cloud. You know, you're pulling out your phone and you're using Uber, or you used to until COVID, you know, you're using cloud. It's there.
But those things don't require a big level of security.
Yeah, they do. You don't even know the security that's involved. That's insane.
I mean, you know, I mean, when you have a conversation on your phone, there's no real, I mean, there may be some need to protect it, but.
No, I can say it to you right now. My people, when they're using corporate phones, those phones are encrypted. I've got an app already running on the phone in the background that's monitoring for account takeover, that's monitoring for malware, that actually looks at all of the apps and monitors them. I've got another app that pulls data down because we do backups of those, you know, accounts. I've got a third application where I go ahead and I actually, you know, anything that they chat on, you know, whether they're using WeChat or whatever the hell they're using that's chat-wise, because we're regulated, I pull a copy of all those chats. There's no privacy on my phones. But it's like, I'm just saying, in the best thing I can tell you is in cloud, security is there. You know, the security is there, but it's different. You know, like right now, my company is 100% SaaS. We're 100% cloud. Does that mean we're easy to break into? No, but the way that you attack us is very different. Predominantly, the way that they get at us is phishing. Because I don't have anything on-prem. I don't have any data centers for you to attack. You know, everything is in Office 365 or in AWS. So you got to attack Amazon or Microsoft, and they got pretty good security. So instead, the way you're getting at us is, you know, you're getting at us through email. You're getting at us through, you know, phishing attacks. You know, and so it shifts my stack. It shifts to where I have to continually educate my employees. You know, I've got to have a very, very good IAM, you know, policy in place that where I'm doing 2FA. You know, I've got to have a really good insider threat policy in place and DLP in place, because now everything, what I'm looking at is I'm not worried about data centers and all the network stuff because I don't own that. My third party owns that, and they're contractually obligated to go ahead and take care of that, and it's encrypted and they're managing it. Instead, what I'm interested in is what's on the endpoints. Where's the data at? You know, how it's being accessed, who's using it, how it's stored, you know, and so, I mean, it does, you know, and so the technologies you use are different. I'm still going to use AV. I'm still going to use EDR. I'm still going to do patch management, you know, but I'm patching endpoints. I'm not patching servers, you know, I'm doing backups on different pieces. You know, it's just cloud allows you to, for me, it allows me to be more flexible. I've got 800 employees in 30 different countries right now, you know, and basically their living rooms are in my network when you really think about it, because they're all working from home, you know. And when we made the decision at the beginning of March that we're doing working from anywhere, they had their laptop, their phone, they walked out the door, went home, plugged in, and it's been business as usual for us. You know, we made $5 billion in profit last quarter. You know, we're doing deals, we're working with startups, we're running as a company, you know, and we're actually pulling metrics data and kind of monitoring, you know, how are the Slack meetings going, how are the Zoom meetings going, how are, you know, and from a productivity standpoint, we're relatively right where we're at, we're right where we were at, but it's because we're all SaaS, you know, we do a lot of due diligence on our SaaS partners. So again, like I said, you know, your security stack changes, you know, because now a lot of your risk is on a third party. And so you do a lot of work with them as to making sure they meet specific requirements. I use NIST CSF, and I built out a whole we got a whole document full of questions and stuff that we make them go through to verify that they are at a level of risk that we're willing to accept. And it's not me making that decision. It's myself, compliance, and legal. There's a whole group of us, and we look at all of our third-party vendors that way, you know, because it is. I mean, you know, you've moved the risk over to them, but you still have the responsibility. You know, the courts don't give a crap that you're using Office 365. If you've got a breach, it's still on you if you've lost your customer's data. You know, Microsoft may be there, you know, proving that it wasn't their fault, that they did everything from a due diligence perspective, you know, but you're going to be there too. So, I mean, it's, you know, it is, it's just a, it's a different view on security. And I can tell you a lot of CISOs were kicking and screaming about it, but COVID has forced, you know, many of them, they don't have a choice. You know, their companies still want to be running as a business. They're going to leverage cloud. They're going to leverage some type of SaaS solution or you know, infrastructure as a service or whatever. You know, and so there's a ton of, you know, projects going on. I'm in several Slack channels with several hundred CISOs, and that's all I'm hearing about. People are up to their eyeballs. You know, a project that they were planning on doing over the next 2 years, they're trying to get done in the next 4 months. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's been pretty crazy. So, yeah, I mean, I can tell you your class is doing CISSP right now. You might want to go ahead and make a note about the cloud certs because you're going to need some type of cloud experience because you're going to be working with it.
Okay. We have a few questions. Yeah, there's one that I liked about TikTok. What are you so TikTok?
What was the question about TikTok?
What are your thoughts on TikTok being blocked?
Well, my problem is my company is an investor in ByteDance, so I really wish it wasn't blocked because we're gonna lose money. But from what I understand, I mean, I've kind of stayed out of that whole thing. But from what I understand, it's a it's supposed to be a, you know, the fact that, you know, some type of, I guess, you know, when they're looking at, you know, people on there, there's data and the Chinese government can go ahead and get that information about people and everything. I've honestly kind of stayed out of it. I mean, right now with the whole election season going on for the next 60 to 90 days, I'm honestly ignoring most of the news because I'm just like, you know, it's the same crap all the time. And I'm more focused about, you know, cybersecurity related stuff. I've just left it alone.
Okay. Perfect. So to not hack my car again. Okay. Gary, if there's no other question, I'd like to thank you for your time. It's greatly appreciated. I think it's very important that, you know, students get a different feel about, you know, the cybersecurity roles, you know, hear about the certification. I think it was probably very interesting to the students. I mean, I hope so, at least. For everybody that attended, please give Tina some feedback about this event. We need to know, you know, if you appreciated it, if you like the content and so forth. And again, Gary, thank you. Tina, would you like to wrap up?
Yep. Thank you so much for Dr. Bacard. And I appreciate so much, Gary, you were able to come and join us today. I think it was a very helpful discussion. I am going to do a feedback form, so everybody will get a feedback form, and I'll share with you any comments I get back from them, and maybe we can circle back and have you back again in 6 months or so and have another session. We have, you know, new students coming all the time that could benefit from your webinar, so we had an awesome time.
Not a problem at all. If you guys need anything, let me know. On my LinkedIn profile, there's about 100-plus articles up there, and a lot of the articles I've written are for people new coming into cyber, where I talk about what certs to do, what professional organizations to join, you know, how to write your first cyber resume, how to do a cyber interview. All that stuff's up there for free. So if it can help anybody, yeah, that's fine. I actually write it and provide it to the community all the time.
All right. Sounds like people are adding you as we speak.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great night. I appreciate it. I'll send out the recording. Or actually, the recording is going to appear on the invite once it stops, so anybody who's on the invite can see the recording. You'll also see the chat there. And I will send out the feedback request in a couple of days.
Okay.
thanks everyone for attending. I appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Bacarda. I'm glad you made it. Thanks so much, Dr. or Gary Hasip. Thanks so much. Good night.
Thank you, Gary. Bye-bye.
Bye.